Hello, and thanks for tuning in to this podcast from the Information Security Forum. This is the first episode to appear under the new name for this podcast, so you'll never hear me stumble over Analyst Insight ever again. Instead, this podcast is going to be called Dear InfoSec. And the idea is that we're going to tackle problems and issues listeners send in, just like agony ants do in newspaper columns, on radio shows, and in podcasts too. Or they could be sort of knotty issues that have come up within InfoSec that we think deserve a bit of an airing and, you know, some solutions sort of generated for them. So, but if you have a suggestion, you want advice, let us know and we will assemble the experts to advise. If you need to have a problem, send us that issue to dearinfosec@securityforum.org. That's dearinfosec@securityforum.org. Get in touch and we'll get right on it. We've got two great questions to kick off and some great guests to give you advice as well. First of those guests is Ivona Mushin from Ageas, an insurer who's a DPO and a CISO at Ageas. Hello, Ivona.
Hello, Mark.
Good to have you back. Do you consider yourself a problem solver? Is that sort of what you do day to day?
Yeah, I think yes, because at the end, you know, I'm positioning myself as advisor for both functions, CISO and DPO. And it's a business who is coming with challenges, not always the problems, and I'm trying to provide the solution.
Yep, sounds like you're perfect. Also here is Erhan Temurkan from CISO from Fleet Mortgages, who very recently joined us to talk about being a BISO. I don't know, is BISO, CISO, are they problem solvers?
100%, Mark, yes. Yeah, you know, working to kind of solve challenges that the business has is kind of core of what we do.
And also here is regular Paul Watts, who I suspect eats problems for lunch, breakfast and dinner.
Well, I suppose I do. I'm quite looking forward to this. We had a go at this at the last UK summer conference. It was quite a lot of fun, actually. And also the cloak of agony aunt or uncle anonymity led to some really interesting questions. So, you know, hopefully we can build on that here.
Yeah, and we are catching Paul literally minutes before he goes on holiday. So who knows what? What are we saying as we get into these?
I'm heading to the airport as soon as we press stop record. You will not see me for dust.
Yeah, so we've got to cram these in. He doesn't want to miss that flight at all. Okay, but I did want to ask, though, about the sort of framing of this, because I said problems, but is that part of the problem with InfoSec? So maybe we should see these as opportunities? Like, I mean, you said and challenges, and sorry, I think you've owned as well. So, yeah, is that, do we need to change our perspective on these things a bit?
I think yes. And if I'm not mistaken, Paul was publishing something on LinkedIn recently, and it was really related to the role and how information security is being perceived. So we have work to do. And I think that we really have to advocate that we are there to support business. We are there to enable them. And also I gave in the same post comment having comparison to the car and the brakes. It's not because you have brakes in the car, it doesn't mean that you are not allowed to drive a car. Brakes are there to allow you to drive faster in a safe way.
That's very true. Yeah.
And she also said that, you know, in some cases it can also save lives. And that is cool. And there were some sunglasses. Do you know what we got called? Right. These are the sorts of challenges that we face. And this was an IT generalist comment made on one of the Sunday broadsheets in the United Kingdom. And IT people were described as lank-haired, bespectacled weirdos. Now, if that's not stereotyping, I don't know what is. And we have to get past this. We've got to change our image, because if that is how we're still being perceived, well, I'd cross the road to avoid myself, never mind anybody else.
Yeah,
interesting, though, right?
Yeah, but I think, because I did read that, and what struck me as well about a lot of the media coverage, and I know you said the same, Erhan, it was just how clueless it was. I mean, having worked in the media, it was not a shock to see that, but it was, I was surprised at how, I mean, we're talking about the CrowdStrike thing here, I sort of think, it's sort of in terms of what happened and how people were tackling that, and just, you know, and it was the, I'd say the lank-haired weirdos that did it, but I don't know, Erhan, do you get that? Sort of, there is a perception of InfoSec people or IT people as still geeks?
Yeah, because I think you know, on the most part, you know, there's a lot of people who still watch, you know, specific movies and see a bit of hacking happen, and they assume that you can break into a system in 5 minutes like they see in the movies, right? But we know that the statistics show us that isn't the case. So I think people build up perceptions over time. There's biases, unconscious bias, there's perceptions, there's all these different elements. And I think, you know, we as a community, we as an industry, need to kind of move past that and actually work to kind of demonstrate what we're, you know, what we're actually there to do. And I guess going back to your early piece around the challenges, I think what often happens is, you know, different elements are brought to us, you know, things are brought to us as challenges, and it's our job to resolve them and highlight them as opportunities. And that's the key bit there.
Yeah, definitely. But that's a great segue into the first question we wanted to tackle, which was, how would you advise someone entering cybersecurity with a non-IT or technical background to maximize their potential and create a fulfilling career? I don't know, Paul, I know you had a quite a technical start to your career, but I guess, but now you write a lot about...
That's because I'm old. I mean, look, the reality of it is now is that cybersecurity, information risk management, is a multidisciplinary, broad-spectrumed smorgasbord of different skills, competences, capabilities. I think half the problem that we have is that we're still bound to our technical STEM roots, you know, and I think that's half of the perception issue. You know, one of the challenges we have of being accepted by businesses, being valued creators, protectors, enablers, and so on and so forth, is our value proposition. You know, we're still seen as the people who say no, and we're still very much aligned to that technical faculty. You know, we've been saying for years that cybersecurity is people and process and technology. That means we need creativity. That means that we need different approaches to problem solving. We need good analytical skills. You know, we don't just need to be able to get the bonnet up on the back of a server and say, well, there's your problem, mate. You haven't got enough patches in there. There's a perception issue that drives all of that. You know, and there are organisations such as UK Cybersecurity Council trying really, really hard to kind of remarket and reposition the tradecraft of cybersecurity as being more than just a technical faculty. But the reality is we've got to push a lot harder than we are.
I agree with Paul, and I think I'm also old enough to have this technical background and some experience, but I actually moved to the less technical role on purpose, because for me, CISO, there is a C in the name, which is chief. Chiefs are people who are giving directions. Chiefs are not people who are having hands-on configuration activities on the servers and firewalls. So those are also people who are able to translate the technical language, the business risk language. And that's how we can also rely on people joining our profession, which are not that technically skilled. However, I would like to say that those people will have to invest a minimum to have this generic knowledge and understanding of what this technology behind is about. It doesn't have to be very deep knowledge, but people are talking about some components like firewalls, proxy, identity and access management systems, that there is this generic notion of what is it and how in general it works, which kind of risk can be related to it. It's not which type of tools you need to do this, how to configure it. That's for me, IT security guys who are specialized in that and who are actually part of information security community and team within the organization.
Yeah. And Erhan, as the youngest person here, I'm going to use you as a spokesman for that entire generation. Have you got, I don't know if you've got a technical background?
I have got a technical background. My thoughts on this are, you know, you can come into security from, you know, different avenues. You know, there's over, you know, when I last checked, you know, don't quote me on this, but there's like a kind of 80 plus roles in now, you know, there's even like a cyber psychologist, you know, who kind of specializes in looking at the mindsets of how hackers work, et cetera. So there are different avenues. You know, you can come in through your technical route, you know, that is IT support lens, infrastructure, et cetera. And there are some who don't come in. You know, I've seen many success stories. You know, I've seen, you know, teachers coming in who, you know, who've got a great background in kind of organizational skills, analytical skills, who then, you know, go and make an amazing security awareness person. You know, I've seen people who are, you know, I've spoken to people who were ex-journalists, just like you, Mark, who then make a great person to look into, investigate threat intelligence and write reports based on that, right? There's a lot of, I think the key bit in any of this is you really have to understand, you know, sit there, if you're coming in with a non-technical background, sit there and really take the time to reflect and understand what your transferable skills are. And then at that point, it's all about the networking and the mentorship, you know, aggregating your current existing skills with the with some of the core skills in our industry. When you mix them both, you know, if you mix them both together, it makes the perfect recipe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's one of the sort of challenges for being a CISO or working at that slightly senior level in InfoSec. And I know you've explored this a lot. It's just how broad your skill set has to be. And I guess, you know, for some people, they come from that technology background, but then have to develop those soft skills as well. Which is, I think, in the UK summer conference, there was, I think, and some of the answers we got to it were, you know, aligned with what you said, Yvonne, in terms of, you know, credibility and that sort of knowledge you need just to have those conversations, because you can be talking to definitely those technical folks as well. But also that just try to encourage people to, you know, not be frightened of it, but also be comfortable to play around with it. And just, I think that's the other side of this, getting comfortable with it as well. And Paul, I have responses to your leadership papers you've done about this. So just if you see that a particular point where those tech skills do fall away.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it varies for everybody. You know, in the research that we did, we identified multiple different types of security leader. But if you take a generalization, and if I kind of, you know, look at my own personal journey, the ratio of technical and business skills did kind of level out. Then business started to overtake technical skills in terms of what, you know, where the vast majority of my time was being spent. If I remember my last CISO role, it was a global role. I was spending all of my time in the boardroom. I was talking to the investors. I was talking to the business. I was talking to the board. I was thinking about strategy. I was thinking about alignment, finances, run rate. Very little time talking about the technicalities of cybersecurity. I think Yvonne made a really, really good point. You've got to know enough to hold your own in a conversation. I completely agree with that. But you just don't have the time or the capacity to go into the depth that you once used to. Back in the old days, it was simple. You know, we were pretty much contained. We worked with technology and we didn't really have a lot to do with business. But as technology has become intertwined in the fabric of business, so has our role and our remit, which means that the composition of the skills that we need to be successful leaders has changed over time. But again, depending on the type of organization you are, those ratios will differ. The standout point is to recognize that there is a complex balance of equation of business and technical skills that make a good security leader in the year 2024. And that will continue to evolve.
Because I guess, yeah, that's the expectation that I think for a security leader, that they appreciate that as well. It isn't all about the technology. And actually, if you get sucked, as you said, Yvonne, if you get sucked into that technology, then you're neglecting a key part. Because I know your role, Yvonne, is across quite a few, it's quite a distributed business at Ageas. And I think you do a lot of diplomacy, don't you? Sort of, which isn't presumably quite very technical.
Yeah, that's correct. And maybe if I would have to give an advice for non-technical skilled person to join our community, I would say, if you are curious, if you try to understand how and why, if you have analytical skills, use common sense, and if you are risk-minded, certainly that's the place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, I mean, I guess our answers are, yeah, you definitely can prosper in InfoSec without that technical background. And in fact, I think it's probably not easier, it's the wrong word, but sort of you can make more of it now than you used to be able to. Because, you know, I certainly talk to quite a few security leaders who are more on that sort of softer skill side than the technical side.
And I would say that they're more marketable as well now. We know as security leaders that, you know, certainly if you're a bit long in the tooth like me, you know, it's taken time to acquire some of those softer skills because they just weren't required in my formative years. So if you're trying to plug that gap, you know, bringing those resources into your community is absolutely the key to success.
I think the key part is, you know, that profile looks very different depending on the type of the organization, as you mentioned, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, there are in the smaller organizations, particularly startups, etc., you know, you are one who has to wear many hats. And, you know, you may be expected to be technical because you're limited in what you have and the budget you have to work with, and you have to work with what you've got, rightly or wrongly. However, you know, in some of the large organizations, yes, you may be slightly, you know, distant from the hands-on and the technical element. And yeah, it's, you know, you kind of wear different hats for different roles. Is the point I'm trying to make.
I think the thing to really reflect on is that there is no such thing as a cookie cutter approach to security, leadership and strategy anymore. There might have been back in the day when you just followed the rule book and, you know, happy days, but it isn't the case anymore, because the context of the organization, the strategic ambitions of the organization, the size, there's just so many moving parts that, you know, if you really want to be seen to be adding value to your organization, context is everything. So you can't take what you did in one organization and apply that in another organization and expect the same outcome or the same set of results, because the variables are different. So just put yourself in that business, learn it, understand it before you even start to put spades in the ground, so to speak.
Yeah, and the soft skills part is so key. You know, who clicks on a phishing email? People. Who are the victims of cyber attacks? People. You know, and it's people are at the heart of everything we do, and we've recognized that. We recognize how powerful those soft skills really are. In some cases, they are more important than the technical skills. And, you know, a lot of these transferable roles that are coming in, you know, the soft skills are, you know, if you look at security roles, they were, just by their very nature, as we've said, they were on the, you know, stronger end on the technical side, right? But there are historical roles that still there previously and still there today that are stronger on the soft skills, and having those role, you know, having individuals come in from those backgrounds and experiences mean that, you know, they have a lot of stronger experience on the soft skills side, which can really give a great approach and complement the team.
And maybe I would like to advocate also, because I'm very happy to be, as a woman, part of this discussion around this table. So women around listening to this podcast, really, there is a place for you to be part of this community. And I know that the ratios are not that great, but of course, yeah, if you don't try, so please try.
Yeah,
give it a go. 100% agree. 100% agree.
100%.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's move on, though. But I think some of the discussion we've just had about soft skills is going to be relevant for the second question, which is a really good one. So here's the question. How do organizations resolve the tension between building a positive security culture and there needing to be real-world consequences for poor practice and behavior by staff? And what should those consequences be? So, yeah, quite a knotty question, I suppose. Sort of, how do you punish people for doing the wrong things? That, is there a sort of minimum time you have to spend to get culture embedded in an organization? I don't know. Who wants to have a go?
I can go.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah, I was always thinking about the stick and the carrot approach until actually I discovered that the carrot approach is working much better than the stick one. And we are investing a lot in what we call human firewalls. So we are putting a lot of emphasis on training, awareness, explanation, and actually the point I'm using when introducing our new employees to the organization and explaining the information security and data protection is making clear to them that whatever we are requesting in their behavior at corporate side is also applicable to their private life, because they also have connections at home, they are using computers, they are subject of phishing emails and all kinds of threats we are confronted as organization. So at the end, it's a win-win. If they actually have certain behavior at the company side, they also can apply it at home. And like this, they can protect their families. So I think that's important element I would like to share, which I think works at our organization.
Yeah, sort of bring it home to people. Yeah, I don't know. Ohan, are you all carrot, all stick, bit of both?
So, yeah, so I think for me, I kind of try and sway away from the word punishment. It's got a bit of a negative connotation around it. I think for me, in life, there's cause and effect. Okay, there's, you know, there's always, you know, if we take it back to what we've just been discussing around soft skills, it all comes down to people, right? And people often don't do, you know, on in the most part, they don't do something for no reason. Okay, so I always take it back to cause and effect and really understand why they did what they did. Is it a lack of knowledge? Is it they didn't understand the impact? You know, and really take it back to actually working, you know, as the example that was just given, working with the business, really work on the interpretation, make sure they understand in their own terms. You know, I've done the same kind of thing, really giving examples in terms of how those same cyber threats impact themselves and their families. So that, you know, really, really takes it home. It's more important these days than ever with hybrid working, because often, you know, the perimeter no longer stops at your, you know, within your own org, but actually the perimeter actually stops within, you know, your employees' homes these days. You need to understand how secure their homes are and their own kind of practices. So, I think I'm really keen on just always working with the business to really understand what went wrong, and really going down the kind of training methodology to kind of work with the business to bring them back on track.
Yeah, certainly, because I've seen that with my kids, that sort of some of the crazes they had when they were sort of younger with questionnaires and all kinds of things being passed around social media. And when you tell them actually what that might be used for and sort of clue them into it, then it does start to resonate. So yeah, I think you're both right, sort of bringing that home to people and getting that point across about how else it can help them. Because I imagine most of us, all of us, have probably been hit by cybercrime in one way or another. I know I have. I've had accounts taken over. I've had cards cloned, all kinds of things. Yeah, Paul, I don't know. Have you seen a change in that? Sort of, was it about punishment in the past and shaming and things like that? Or has it got a bit more tolerant?
Well, it certainly used to be when the vast majority of organisations presided over a compliance culture, and it was you will be compliant, which is a horrible negative connotation associated with what it is we do. The reality of it is that it all comes down to the culture. But more importantly than that, it comes down to our leaders and the people that we look up to within our organisations leading by example. There is no point in me saying, oh, you know, we've got to get the balance of carrot and stick right. If the board are saying, yep, we've got to all be, you know, good cyber citizens, and then doing the polar opposite of what it is they are asking the business to do. That tone at the top is the guiding light, the North Star, the thing that defines the culture of the organisation. And you've got to be able to tap into that. And if you haven't changed that culture, then all you are is compliant and stick beats carrot. What you need is a good balance of the two, because there does need to be some sort of consequence for repeat offenders. And the dynamic of that stick versus carrot will change over time. But in general terms, you are looking to nurture your organisation and put people in a position where they feel comfortable to call out wrongs, where they feel comfortable to say when I think I did something wrong, where you're reporting on near misses rather than actual incidents, when you're expressing and celebrating failure and you're extolling that positivity that helps you create that culture that allows you to be a better cyber savvy organisation. But if management aren't following that drumbeat, you're doomed to fail.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you know, as Paul said, you know, in the most part, you know, there's a difference between repeat negligence and someone making a mistake. Okay, and really, people are really at the heart of everything we do, we need to really sit and understand why they did that certain thing. You know, it could be this is where the role of kind of like the piece around the soft skills and emotional intelligence comes in, is really understanding what happened in that person's life that day. Okay. Mm. Maybe they lost a family member that day. Okay. Mm. Could happen. Right. Mm. And their current mindset at that moment is that they didn't read the email correctly. And what I've seen in the past is that those individuals, once you sit them down and talk them through the kind of near miss, what could have happened or what did happen, if it did happen, unfortunately, is they can actually then become the best advocate you've got. You know, so but really taking that time to kind of talk them through what that looked like. And what I mean by that is I don't just mean showing a feedback form saying, oh, thanks, you reported a phishing email. But actually, sometimes seeing is believing, actually showing them this is what could have happened if this turned into a ransomware attack, really brings it home.
Right. Totally agree with that. I did a show and tell at my last organization, a couple of friends of our extended security family, naming no names, but she's written a book and so has he. You can work out with the couple I'm talking about. And they really brought it to life in a very easy to understand way, just how these attacks work and what the circumstances are. And I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people done. It was a completely, non-mandatory webinar. Turn up if you're interested. And people really, it hammered it home, and people were interested and they were attentive. But the thing that really hammered it home is this could happen to me outside of the organization. And what you then have is people admitting a certain vulnerability. Now they understand how it could happen. When you take away that protective layer of Erhan and Ivona and all those people in our security functions that are keeping our organizations and the employees safe, when it's just you and your house and your PC and the gatepost and the big bad world around you, who's going to look after you? Well, it starts with you. And as soon as people get that, start to understand there's something in it for them at a very, very personal level, and now you can build on that.
Yeah, but presumably it takes a while. I don't know, Ivona, I remember when we talked about governance and things, you said the sort of programs you were trying to embed, sort of instill that good culture, but it took time. And I just wonder, do organizations need to accept that they will get caught out as this stuff starts to embed? I don't know if that's a sort of necessary part of this.
Yeah, I think that it's investment. It's not going to happen overnight. And of course, for me, there's still a combination of technical measures you are putting in place versus awareness and training. And what I've seen as important element, you can protect technically a lot of things. You can lock it down, but then it's not workable for people because they still have to perform their duties. So the challenge for us is to find this balance between how far technically you are going to protect organization and how much user-friendly your solutions are going to be. And then actually I came to the conclusion that, okay, sometimes we have to give up technical solution to invest in awareness because it's going to bring much more of the effort and actually the results than blocking things, because people are very inventive. You can block or you can close one door, they are going to open another window and two other doors, and then you are just running after, instead of making them aware, showing them why and how to protect. And then if they are going to see open window, they are going to come to you, say, look, do we have to close it, or it's fine that it's open? So that's actually my experience and I would say advice to my fellows to approach it in such a way.
It's like the proverbial game of whack-a-mole, isn't it, working in this gig? Every time you bash one assailant, somebody else pops up over there. So if everybody's got a hammer and you can all be hitting at the same time, then you've got a cat's hope and hell's chance of staying on top of it. So you need people brought in, as Ivona says, you need people to be those eyes and ears for. You need those people to be proactive. Absolutely agree. Once you've got them on the journey and you sustain them and keep their interest and they're not worried about reprisals, you've got that balance right. Now you can build on that.
Yeah, I think it is it's that flipping it around, seeing those people as not the problem, but as the opportunity to make things better. As you said, Ivona, just ease back a bit on those technical controls and trust them in some respects to start to do the right kinds of things and show them why it's important as well. And then you do get those, I guess, some of those network effects start to kick in as well and starts to get more defenses in more places. Yeah, interesting. Thanks for that. So the next stage for this is then for either Ivona or Erhan or even Paul to set up a problem for the next Dear InfoSec podcast. So I don't know if you've got a particular problem that we can tackle next time with different experts.
Well, who's going first? Shall I go first?
Yeah,
I'll go first. So here's my question. How do we as security practitioners and leaders better market who we are, what we are, and why we are? That's my question.
Cool. Ivona, do you have a particular question that you've got?
You know that I'm struggling actually with the governance and with the roles, in the sense that, we discuss it, we have different type of organizations and yeah, the question is, where do you put the CISO in the organization? Is it going to stay under IT, how it is in some organizations? And we said, okay, maybe for smaller organization, less mature organization, that's the place to be. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we all know that if you do this, you have a serious conflict of interest for that position. So what's, yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to hear how people are actually managing that. I know that there are no standards, and Paul mentioned also we have such a big variety of type of functions within information security. Okay. That's okay. How are we going to put all this together?
Yep, that's a great one. Thank you. And Erhan?
My one is, how do we innovate with a kind of with a risk-averse culture and slimming budgets? I guess what I want to know is, you know, how do we justify the cost to innovate, recognizing that, you know, any such attempt has a chance of failure and waste? I'll put that one to you all.
Got plenty to choose from there. So yeah, tune in again for when we will be doing those. Thanks to Erhan, thanks to Ivona, thanks to Paul. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. You can now find ISF Podcasts on all major podcast platforms. You can look for our page on Audioboom, or you can search wherever you get your podcast for the Information Security Forum or Dear InfoSec. And the podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn much more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.